Speaking of reliability. Friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Kravosvik. How you doing, Fred?
Hey, pretty good, James. It's been a hectic last few months or so, and I think we talked about it on one of our shows that we met for the first time after a couple of years.
Yeah.
At a conference, right?
Yes.
And you had the really cool recording booth set up, and you were knocking down a bunch of shows over on Rooted in Reliability. You got how many of the SMRP sessions did you have recorded and set up?
I want to say there was 16 or 17 episodes that we recorded live at SMRP.
Okay. Yeah, you've been publishing them for the last month or so in a couple of weeks. So, I think you can actually search by SMRP 18 in your show, and you can find all of those ones. And they're pretty cool conversations. They're a bit more, they're not so structured, I think. They're more standing in the hallway at a conference.
Yeah, we were in the main, just outside the main exhibit area, so there's lots of background noise, and it wasn't as structured as the typical show. It was more, let's just talk to people, let's find out what's going on in their world, what they're working on, what can we share, those sorts of things. So it was a lot less structured.
That's cool. Yeah. So did you learn anything out of that? I mean, either doing podcasts or from those conversations, you know, what'd you pick up out of that stuff?
I always learn from doing the podcasts. I have so much to learn about every topic that we talk about. So I make sure to try and get the experts on to talk to them about that topic and learn one or two things during those podcasts myself as well. So you pick up a lot, you know, whether it was about cloud computing and IIoT or edge computing, or whether it was back down to some of the basics on planning and scheduling or procedures and stuff like that. It was definitely a great way to learn.
Well, I mean, we have the advantage of having a microphone in front of us, and we're offering that expert an audience, really, right? So they're talking to us to make it comfortable, but they also know that they're going to get exposed to thousands of other people. So there's something in it for them. But, you know, I find at that conference and other conferences is it's those hallway conversations that, you know, one, you get to know people and you get to network and create a connection with somebody. But even just the questions people are asking or what they thought of a speaker or, you know, all that stuff, you know, what's going, like you phrased it, James, is what's going on in their world is often, I think, the best part of a conference.
It does a lot of things. One, you get to understand what people are dealing with, how they're overcoming things, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You also, as a practitioner, you get to realize you're not the only one dealing with these problems. So it gives you a little bit of comfort that knowing that you're not the only one trying to overcome this barrier or implement this new process or whatever the case is, right?
Yeah, we're not alone.
Exactly.
and that's the refreshing part. Now, it's not to take away from, you know, the trade show folks and all the booths and vendors and the presentations and all that stuff, but I find having a microphone is a great way to get the expert's attention for 25, 30 minutes. Yet I find as much or more value out of those network connections and those hallway conversations. So what would be next, James, in your bucket? What would be the next best way to learn stuff if you're at a conference?
So there's a lot of things. There's those conversations, like you said, you know, whether it's in the hallway, whether it's at the lunch table, whatever the case is, you know, just talking to people, how they're overcoming things. The presentations and track sessions and workshops are also another great way. And I'm going to talk about it in two different ways. So to me, attending those sessions, that's a great way to learn.
Yeah. Some sessions are better than others in the presentation skills. I think it's engineers in general are not always great presenters.
No. And even though the content might be great, if it's not delivered well, people may not learn or apply it, right? So that's one of the concerns. The big thing, though, that I find is you can sit through a great session, learn some stuff, but if you don't go apply it or dig into that topic deeper, you're probably not going to retain a lot.
That's right.
Right. You need to actually apply that or try it or investigate it further or something of that nature to make sure it sticks, and that way you benefited from it.
You know, one of the things I've done over the last few years when I'm in a session like that, or even on a webinar type event, is instead of taking notes to capture the outline or the main points of the presentation, which is a way we learned how to take notes in school, right? You outline the topics, you take away the key phrases and the structure of it. And it's a great way to review your notes to remember what were the elements of that presentation. I find I sit there and I take notes on two tracks. One is ideas. Oh, that sparked an idea I need to follow up on, or that's a question I need to ask, or that's something I need to research, or I need to find that part of the paper, or things like that, ideas. And then the other part is action items. Is like, oh, call Bill about X, you know, check the temperature of this. You know, it's very specific verb, noun, action items. Mm-hmm. And I find that if I take those action items and the ideas and put them into my daily routine of what do I need to work on, they get done.
Yeah.
Not always, but yeah, but they get done.
It's a higher chance of it getting done.
That's
but
right.
I think you touched on something there. And I'm going to admit, I am probably one of these, I do it myself. And that is simply going back and looking at the paper. The paper has so much technical detail, so much information. And I know I'm guilty of sitting through presentations saying, that was great, I got to learn more about it. But I never go look at that paper that's mm-hmm. associated with it. I think that that is something that would provide a huge benefit. It would reinforce what you've already heard. You'd be able to dive into a bit more of the details, the technical pieces, those sorts of things, just by going back and visiting that paper.
Yeah, I agree. And I find that I'm old fashioned, I guess, if I print the paper or put, you know, or what I've been doing more recently is just the action item, go find this part of the paper. So I know that what I'm looking for, and then I run across the rest of it. But if I print it and put it in my inbox, basically, it's much, much more likely to get seen. But it's right. It's perfect. I agree completely, is that those technical papers and so on. I find that I come back from a conference and I'm there 3-4 days for the bigger conferences, and there's multiple tracks and there's, you know, maybe 200-300 papers, of which 20 of them I want to read. And it's, you look at it in that large scale, that's a week or a month of my time for reading.
Yep.
So I'm like, I break it down to, I need to go to this paper for this topic and try to chunk it down and tie it to something else I'm working on. Then it's much more likely to go. Not to say that you shouldn't plan on spending time doing that. I think that cements those ideas and concepts and goes deeper. It does all those great things. It's just, you got to block out the time. And it's also a point when you're just getting back to the office and everything's piling up and you know, it's crunch time at that point. But if you don't schedule it, it's probably not going to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, the second way I find I benefit from presentations and those sorts of things is by actually doing them.
Mm-hmm.
I find when I get up to speak about a topic, to present upon a topic or a theory or whatever the case is, I will spend a tremendous amount of time researching it, better understanding it, those sorts of things. And that forces me to learn much, much more and become much more competent in that topic or that theory than I would normally be.
Yep.
So I think by forcing myself to get up there and talk about something, that just creates a whole drive to learn more about it.
I agree. And it's, you know, I just saw something about, it was unrelated to presenting and learning, yet I think it's an interesting statistic. And it was about job applicants. And a man will apply for a job if they're 60% believe that they have 60% of the requirements for what the opening is listing. So it might list 10 things, right? But if I don't happen to have a PhD in that field, a guy will much more likely apply anyway. And women are much, much less likely to apply unless they cover 100% of the stated requirements. And the article went on and another tangent, but I found, I don't know whether it's a male female thing. I have found though that I don't need to be the premier expert in a topic to write a paper on it. I find that the writing the paper and doing the presentation or doing the webinar is just as you said, James, is the way I put myself on a deadline to learn enough to explain it well to other people.
Exactly. Exactly. That is a huge way that I find I learn better is when I'm forced to do or volunteer for these things and then realize I got to get much more knowledgeable about it.
That's right. Now, the other part, I'd say there's a third piece to doing presentations and or just watching presentations is I think there's so much of an advantage in the learning process of writing a paper and presenting. Yet you also want to do it well so that the presentation itself gets the point across. And you and I have talked about this a couple of times of different techniques of doing presentations and building engagement and all that stuff. Yet I learned a ton of that stuff by watching other people present. Oh, that was great. That was great. That was great. How'd they do that? What was the technique there? What was, you know, how'd they structure that? Like you, I asked you about those exercises you worked into your presentations. And also you learn from ones that are really, really bad. You know, the ones that do everything you're not supposed to do. They tons of words on the slide and they read every word to you, you know, kind of thing.
It's yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah, so you learn good and bad. So, and then how about the trade show? I mean, most conferences, not all conferences, many conferences will have vendors show up. It's a way for them to host or create some money to pay for the conference event itself. But the vendors are there and they're standing around waiting to answer your questions.
Yeah. And that is another great area to learn. So yes, vendors are there to sell products or services. I get that. But most of them are very happy just to talk about the technology or the applications of it or why this training is more effective than that training or why you need this versus that. A lot of them will answer the questions you have without any major issues, without any concerns about trying to sell you or upsell you stuff, right? Mm-hmm, they will have that conversation with you. And I know I've done it at many conferences where people will say, hey, on break, can I grab you for 10 minutes? Here's a problem I'm having. I would just want to bounce some ideas off you. And I'll go sit down with them, have a coffee, and go over what they're doing and how they're working through it with them. Mm-hmm, Most vendors are more than happy to do that, I find.
Well, it's what's in it for them is they get to understand, just like our when we were talking about the hallway conversations, they learn what's happening in the world and what kind of problems people are facing, and they get to demonstrate their expertise or knowledge in an area. And I've had very honest vendors say, oh, yeah, we don't, you know, I understand that problem and our solution's not the right one for you. Go over there and talk to Bill. Maybe he didn't want to work with me. I'm not sure. but they're like, you know, there are better solutions for you. Go somewhere else. And the ones I just keep going past is like, hey, you have a business card? They don't even ask for your name. They want to get you on the mailing list, yep. And then they'll spam you for the next year. And I'm like, no, I don't want that.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, I find that it's that one-on-one. Don't go when everybody's there and they're trying to meet and greet 20 people standing in the line. Carve out a little bit of time. And when they're not overwhelmed on a break, and find those 10, 15 minutes to get into a better conversation. I think that's the trick to the, and then follow up as you get messages and mail from these guys, send them questions.
Yep. You know? And, you know, I was listening to another podcast on my drive back from Toronto on Thursday, and they're talking about conferences and it's completely unrelated to maintenance, reliability, asset management, all that stuff, just another mm-hmm. podcast. And there's two great tips that I picked up from that podcast. And it might be a way to help people get connected with the people they want to talk to, get questions answered from those presenters or panelists, if you will. Mm-hmm. So there's two things that I picked up from it. The first one was if you're at a panel session and when the panel session is over, everyone rushes to go talk to the panelists to talk, you know, ask their favorite panelists, whatever questions, so on and so forth.
Right.
What the recommendation was is, usually the moderator, nobody goes and talks to them, yet they know all of the panelists and they're probably just as knowledgeable as many of the panelists up there. Mm-hmm. So go talk to them.
Oh, good idea.
Then the other thing I heard is if you're going to talk to that speaker, or that panelist that's super busy because they got 50, 100 people trying to talk to them at that point, write them your question with your email address or phone number or whatever on a piece of paper and give it to them as a note. They won't look at it right away because they're busy dealing with everyone else. But when they go to sit down and remember, there's a note there, and read it.
Yeah, and you get more of their time at that moment, right? They're concentrating just on your question and not on the three people that, oh, I got to talk to that person, I got to talk to that person. You get it right off the bat.
Exactly. Now, I haven't tried these tips. I just heard these on my drive home on Thursday. So I am going to put these to the test at the next conference. So right. There's the disclaimer. I haven't tried them yet, but I will give them a try at the next conference.
No, those are great ideas. I'm heading to a conference next week, so this is good timing for me. That's perfect. No, one of the things is, I think the last point I wanted to raise with you, James, is, I mean, we talked about networking and presenting and attending presentations and the trade show piece of it and so on. And a bunch of it is what you do afterwards, right? It's always the... I think it starts even before you go to the conference, is go to the conference with an agenda in some regard.
Yeah. Know what you want to learn, know what you're going to cover, know what you want to take back from the conference. If you just go there, I'm going to learn some stuff. When you get back, you're not really going to apply much. If you do, you're probably the few percent that actually do then. Mm-hmm. But if you go there with that plan, we need to implement predictive maintenance. I'm going to go to this track session on vibration, this one on ultrasound, this one on running a predictive maintenance program. And when I get back, I'm going to take one or two things from each one of those and work on implementing those. If you have that plan, you're much more likely to actually execute and learn those topics and make headway, make improvements.
Yeah. I found, I'm an introvert at conferences. It's hard for me to go introduce myself to somebody and start a conversation and stuff. But once I get started, I thoroughly enjoy it, right? I enjoy that part of it, but just getting started is hard to do. But I found, and this was years and years ago, is creating that list of questions or topics I'm looking for answers for. Then I have something to talk about. It's high, you know, oh, it's snowing outside. Okay, great. Now what do we talk about? Oh, what do you know about motor reliability and how is it alignment's more important or is it temperature on the bearings? And then we start a conversation and what to look for. But I find that agenda lends itself not only to what sessions to go to, but what questions I want to go ask or start conversations around. And that's been very helpful for me.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, the key thing I think from conferences is if you're going to go, what are you actually going to take away from it? What are you trying to do with that knowledge that you're gaining? Mm-hmm. Right? Because
it's not just which vendor has the best swag.
Exactly.
It might be a secondary objective, but no.
Exactly. You need to know what you're going to try to accomplish. And if you don't have that, I think you'll pick up bits and pieces, but you won't get as much out of it as you should or normally would if you had that plan going in.
That's right. Oh, man. So how many conferences are you going to this year, James? How many are on the docket for you?
So I will be at Reliable Plant in April. I'm presenting a paper there. The SMRP Symposium in, I think it's June. I'm presenting a paper and a workshop at that one. Those are the only two that are confirmed at this point. There might be a few more coming up. Usually Accelerate that Fluke puts on, I'm down at that one. SMRP's annual conference typically, and probably maybe one or two more after that, but nothing confirmed aside from the two.
Well, there's a couple in Canada you've mentioned before, PMAC, yes. I think it is.
PMAC I'm in Edmonton this year, so I will likely be at that one as well. But once again, nothing confirmed yet. I don't have papers in or abstracts in or nothing confirmed back yet for some of them. So
yeah, and it's a varying lead time and getting on those lists and following that pattern and looking for them makes sense. And I want to mention before as we wrap up here is that on Ascendo Reliability underneath the calendar menu item. I don't know if you've seen this yet or seen it, James. It's been there for. It's just quietly sitting there on the menu tree. It's a call for paper listing. And I've been listing, my wife and I have been listing conferences as we find them. We search for maintenance reliability engineering conferences, safety conferences. I'm going to start adding systems engineering type conferences, the product design type focused conferences, industry specific things that have a lot of reliability content in it. I think we have something like, I think there's 40 or 50, maybe it varies from month to month, but I think at one point we had over 100 upcoming conferences ordered, sequenced by call for papers, due dates. And it has a link back to the site, their sites to show. So if you can, if you're tired of the same old conference, there's hundreds and hundreds of conferences available every year to get your paper across or to create networks and so on. So I wanted to do a plug for that call for paper listing.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and there are, I never realized there's this many different conferences. You could go to one every week.
You could. Yeah, it's not that I'm advocating somebody go professionally just attend conferences all the time. You actually need to get some work done too. Yet, if you're in the marine industry or in the bridge building industry, or you're some of the times those industry specific ones have really good content around the topics that we're interested in. And it's a different, it's not just birds of a feather. It's not only maintenance reliability folks at these, it's the industry folks. So you get the bigger context, and then vice versa. It's great to go to like SMRP and focus down on our tools and techniques and those kinds of things. That's great. Yet I think being aware of the breadth of what's available and your topic may fit better in one of these other conferences than the one you typically would think to go to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have to spend some time going through there and see if there's anything else I should submit for.
There you go. Cool. All right. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there, James. I'm going to ask our listeners, you know, take a look at the conference list. And if there's one that's missing or there's one of them that's your favorite or something like that, we'd love to hear from you on it. Probably for James and I to add to our list of conferences to consider or take a closer look at. There's a lot of good stuff out there, and we'd like to know, you know, if you're going to be doing a presentation or a paper, let us know over at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and we'll put it in our routine of getting the word out for folks and help you get an audience built up for your paper. And also it's a way to promote the range of different conferences that we have out there and available. We'd be happy to do that. So again, that's ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And we look forward to hearing from you. So thanks so much, James. Appreciate talking to you this morning.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.